And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to our first episode of August, our first episode post-live event. And here we are, Luke. We survived. I know that folks have heard it from us once already. And they're going to hear about it again. But those were some of the most, and it can be completely transparent and honest, those are some nerve-wracking 72, 96 hours leading up to it, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that was a lot to organize, in a short amount of time. And there was a lot of people. And I should also say, hey to the people that bought pint glasses, that we need to ship them to you. I've got them. They're they're in my basement. I'm looking at them. They are packed. And I just need to figure out the USPS stuff. You will get them. I'm sorry. I'm not a logistics expert, basically. Sorry, you're getting your pint glasses. But we really should thank everybody for coming out. Brewing, that was awesome. All the people. I mean, it was a ton of folks. It was a ton of fun.
I mean, we literally thought, or at least I did, you were the one who had the faith, and for everybody who had fun at the live event, you should absolutely give all the credit to Luke for convincing me that, hey, it'll be okay if even two people show up, because that was my biggest fear, that it's going to be like six of us there at a table, and if that would have been it, that would have been fine.
Yeah, instead there were like 152 people.
Yeah, 150 of you guys showed up to a podcast live recording in late July, which is wild to me. So if you're going to hear it a lot, probably, but Luke and I are entirely grateful to you guys. We hope you guys had fun. We hope you guys enjoyed the GM, Garrett Chernoff, tight ends coach Clay Patterson, and corners coach Rod Chance. I think they each kind of had a unique story, and then being able to ask them questions afterwards, I think kind of just lets it be interactive. So we again want to thank you guys for coming out so much. It meant the world to us, and I know it meant the world to me, that knowing that we somehow, you know, I'm saying this and I'm shaking my head. We got 150 of you guys to come out, drink beer, and talk Gopher football on a Thursday night in July. It's just flat out wild to me.
Yeah, and I think that speaks in large part to how excited maybe as a fan base people are to get started with this upcoming season, right? I know that we took a little bit of a damper a few days ago, just before the live practice that people could attend, hearing that Zach Anixter was injured. But I think that just the number of people that showed up just speaks to how excited people are for, number one, the sports abyss to be over and Gopher football to be back.
Well, in their defense, this should be, I mean, we talk about it all the time. When is Minnesota going to have a legitimate chance to compete in the Big Ten West? Well, you've gone through the 5-7 season with PJ Fleck. You saw the doldrums that was October last year. You saw it really start to click in November, December. And here we are, where I think the smart people around college football right now are starting to figure out, number one, Minnesota's schedule is pretty damn easy compared to some of the other Big Ten West. And then it's also like, hey, you know, Minnesota was pretty damn good to end 2018. If they can keep that going into 2019, we could be talking about, number one, an interesting November, and number two, potentially Indianapolis. So I don't blame you. I mean, I came out with my prediction for this season. I'm not going to give it away now. I'm sure you've already read it if you haven't already on Gopher Illustrated. But, I mean, I'm going ballsy here. I'm saying 8-9 wins in the regular season. And we'll get into that here in a couple episodes from now. We get into it breakdown by breakdown. But there's a lot of reasons to be excited about this Gopher football team that are legitimate. And that's just not saying that to this maroon and gold color sunglasses I'm wearing right now.
Yeah. And you know, not to mention, like, I think people are still even pretty optimistic, even with the news that Zach Anixter likely will be out for the season. I believe that he had surgery today on his foot. I don't think the injury has actually been disclosed to my knowledge, that or I just missed it. But, you know, he's effectively, let's basically consider him lost for the season. Maybe he could play based on a red shirt, but this is the Tanner Morgan show. And right now I think people are still pretty bullish on this squad, even though, you know, they're not going to have the QB battle play out here in fall camp.
I mean, how peak Minnesota sports is it, though, that we're not even a week into fall camp at that point? They're going into practice three, and arguably the favorite for the starting quarterback position goes down with a non-contact injury that ends his season before it even starts.
Better question, what's up with Minnesota quarterbacks getting, like, non-contact injuries? I'm thinking of, like, Teddy Bridgewater, you know, really freakish.
I mean, Teddy Bridgewater, my guy Teddy Bridgewater, I'm a big Bridgewater guy. I mean, he damn near died. If they almost had to, I mean, if you haven't heard that story, the Teddy Bridgewater injury, I mean, he nearly died because of some complications that were going on the field. And just the fact that he's now playing football again and is the incumbent to Drew Brees is wild. But I'm with you. I mean, geez, I don't know who has the voodoo doll. Wherever you are, can you please put it down for one season so these Gopher football fans that have long endured just these bad football season after bad football season, let them have one good one here in 2019, please. But that's what happened here with Zach Anikstead was – I was standing there in the scrum with PJ Fleck when he was talking about it, and sounds like Zach was just rolling out and he threw the ball and he came down on his what is now right foot. I saw him at practice yesterday in a boot. As Luke said, he's going to have surgery today to fix whatever it is. The two, I guess, Vegas bets in terms of what it is, because Fleck won't talk about it, is it's either a Lisfranc, which is the same injury that Antoine Winfield had last year that ended his season against Maryland, or it could be a plantar fasciitis rupture. Both of those from my WebMD / that's what my sources have told me. That's kind of what it looks like. And that's where Fleck hasn't really entirely ruled him out for 2019 yet. But I would be very, very surprised if you saw more than maybe one game of Zach Anikstead. He had surgery today. You're looking at a minimum 3-month timeline, which means that Tanner Morgan gets the job. And we talked with Tanner about that yesterday in terms of what's it like to – you've been gearing through – you know, you were gearing up for it in the spring. You guys knew that you were still battling against each other. You went through all that work in the off season, in the summer, and then you get 3 days into fall camp and you see your competition go down. And what's that like? And Tanner was genuine about it, and he felt bad. I mean, he wanted to earn it outright, sure, but Zach's also a guy that he's been with. He's been through a lot with him. And he was the first guy into the training room after practice that day, and he went and prayed for him. Whatever you are spiritually, I just think that kind of shows what kind of guy that Tanner Morgan is, that, yeah, you know, you're happy you're now the starting quarterback for a team that is projected to be pretty damn good on offense. You're the first guy in the training room to go really tell him, you know, I'm so sorry, I'm praying for you, and he actually does it. But what does that mean now? I mean, Tanner Morgan becomes the guy, and depth becomes awfully scary, Luke.
I mean, yeah, and this really isn't the only position that is scary, but yes, yeah, depth becomes really scary quarterback. But I mean, in the same respect, like, part of me is not that scared because we were kind of in the same situation. Just now we have one quarterback with actual experience just behind him. We have basically identical situation to last year, just sans a red shirt on one of them.
Right, and that's where Tanner Morgan is the guy. Don't think that Seth Green is going to come in and be the number two. Please, please, please don't think that, because that's not the actual reality. It's just, you know, Seth Green's role, and I feel bad for Seth in this role or in this aspect, that Seth can't really find, or he, not necessarily that he can't find, but the staff just doesn't let him settle in to one position, because throughout the spring and throughout the summer, folks, he was essentially working at wide receiver 95% of the time. He wasn't even in quarterback meetings because he really wanted to try and earn a role as a pass catcher. So he gets into fall camp here, and yeah, Minnesota was still going to use the Wildcat some, but they also had two quarterbacks that I knew that they could probably rely on. Then Zach goes down with this injury, and now Seth's having to shift a little bit more back into the quarterback room. Now, from someone who watched Seth throw passes yesterday, you don't want Seth throwing a lot of passes in a game. Can Seth be competent enough to throw a jump pass and a 2-point conversion, or you get in third and short, fourth and short, or near the goal line? Can he complete one of those passes within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage? Sure. But if you want him throwing a 5-10 yard out, it's not a throw, it's a push. It's a push to the outside. So you're still going to see the Wildcat come back into full effect, especially as Minnesota wants to make sure that they have something different to show opposing defenses. But for Seth, I mean, a guy that's worked so hard at receiver, now he's kind of come back to that quarterback room. And Fleck talked about it yesterday, where he's now working as a wide receiver, a tight end, and as a quarterback. And no more importantly, the quarterback was mentioned third, which means that between Cole Kramer from Eden Prairie and then Texas freshman as well, Jacob Clark, they're going to be battling for the number two. And I'm going to be awfully interested to see who wins that, because I think they're neck and neck right now. And I think that may surprise some people, but I've said on this podcast for seemingly a year now, don't you dare sleep on Cole Kramer, because I know he comes from a 1922 offense in Eden Prairie, where I think for the first time, this is a stat I believe I heard from one of the Eden Prairie assistant coaches, for the first time in Mike Grant's tenure at Eden Prairie, they threw the ball more last year than they ran. I mean, that's a huge statistic, because this is an offense that Eden Prairie doesn't throw the ball a lot. They haven't traditionally, and I think it was like 55 pass, 45 run last year. But Cole Kramer is a guy that can move the ball down the field with his arm. If I were to compare him to Tanner Morgan in his first year, I think Cole is more athletic, and I think Cole has a better arm. Now, Tanner here in 2019 has two more years in the system. He knows what to really think when he goes out on a Saturday. But just don't sleep on Cole Kramer, because as good as Jacob Clark has the potential to be, they are still neck and neck right now. And so if for some reason Tanner at some point this season sprains an ankle and he's out for a week, I mean, you may see maybe a 50-50 mix of Seth Green and the freshman quarterback, depending on what Minnesota thinks they need to do to win the game. But I would just hate to see if Tanner goes down for, heaven forbid, a season-ending injury, that Seth is the one out there, because you have so many weapons in this offense in the passing game with Tyler Johnson, Rashad Bateman, Chris Hoffman-Bell, Brevin Spanfor, Jake Paulson, Demetrius Douglas, and to kind of throw it away for a Chris Streveler 2015 game against San Jose State, I don't think would be wise. And so Kirk Schrocka went through it last year with two freshman quarterbacks who had never played, so he knows what he's doing. It's just if Minnesota can get 12, 13 games of Tanner Morgan this fall, the ceiling is still there. Nothing is broken yet. I know how peak Minnesota sports it is, but I still feel very confident with Tanner Morgan from what I've seen in the spring, from what I've seen in fall camp so far, that he can still lead this offense to the aspirations that they believe that they have in 2019.
All right, let me raise a couple of concerns I have. And maybe this is reading into it a little bit too much. But when I look at this situation, the one thing that concerns me is now that you don't have an experienced Anikstead, playing backup, for instance, let's just imagine hypothetically that Tanner Morgan had won the job outright. I have some concern that they're not going to allow, or they're not going to actually run Morgan as much as he was. We can recall in like the Nebraska game, he was actually quite effective with his feet. And now I'm not trying to say that, you know, he's the next Tommy Frazier for people that remember the wishbone days of Nebraska. Apparently they're almost back, by the way. But what I want to say is, I'm just concerned that they're going to get a little bit more conservative from a play calling perspective in efforts to protect Morgan because of the concern about having lack of depth. And maybe I'm reading into this too much, but that's maybe my largest concern right now.
I mean, in my point back to you would be outside of that Nebraska game where Nebraska against Tanner Morgan in that second half was essentially just playing prevent defense because they were up 75-0 because Minnesota's defense was so inept that they just played everybody back. And so Tanner, if he didn't have anything, could just take off with his legs. I mean, go watch the last four or five games of the year where maybe Tanner took it twice, three times a game. And I even know towards Wisconsin and Georgia Tech, Kirk Schrocka was making a big effort in that quarterback room to say, hey, use your legs. Like, we need you to be effective pulling the ball two, three, four times a game to keep that defensive end honest so we can really open things up in the run game. And that's going to in turn open things up. I really think it has an effect one way or another. I say that because if Tanner does go down, yes, it's going to be Cole Kramer and Jacob Clark, but Schrocka showed last year that this offense can still move the ball with a quarterback that can do things with these timing throws in the offense. This RPO offense is pretty simple. Now, with Tanner going into year three here, I expect you to see some different wrinkles with some different routes. Maybe instead of, the linebacker sitting on that slant in the third and fourth quarter where Tanner got into trouble last year, Minnesota, does a slug-o, or they go with a post to try and you know, really switch things up. I know switching from a slant to a post, this is mind-boggling things. But you look at Tanner's stats last year in his six starts, he completed 58% of his passes. That's fine for 1,152 yards. That's an average of 15 yards per completion, which is pretty good, and an average of 192 yards per game through the air. But I think maybe the most important thing in those six starts was 9 passing touchdowns and 4 interceptions. So you have over a 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio, which Tanner would tell you as he plays with Elite Howe. By the way, if you haven't listened to Tanner Morgan talk, he is just a spitting image of PJ Fleck with all the Fleckanisms, with the Howe and the Elite and the Necton mentalities. I mean, he is exactly what PJ Fleck would want in a quarterback, but he's a kid that had his 6 starts against all Power 5 competition, 5 Big Ten teams and an ACC team, and he took care of the ball. And that was something that Zach struggled with, and then you saw Minnesota win 4 of his final 6 games. Now, I don't know that I'm a huge believer in that quarterback wins is an actual legitimate stat, because I also think that Joe Rossi took over for, I think
6 5? Games.
5 or Purdue, 6 games.
Let me think. Purdue Northwestern. Who did they play after Northwestern?
Purdue, Northwestern, Wisconsin, Georgia Tech. So in 4 of those final 6, Joe Rossi took over the defense. The defense went from allowing 40-plus points a game in Big Ten play to shutting down Purdue, shutting down Wisconsin, and shutting down Georgia Tech. Now, did Tanner Morgan have a part in that? Sure. But in that same respect, you know, Joe Rossi did his thing as well. So I just think that, I mean, I've been screaming on this podcast for the quarterback to please just take the ball 3 times a game and read option, because it opens things up so much. And now we have the more mobile of the two quarterbacks being the guy that's going to see all the snaps. I just think that that still should be in the offense, and I don't think it really changes much with Kirk Ciarrocca.
All right, that's fair. I still have some hesitations, but we can...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that,
yeah,
you know, Tanner Morgan's going to be the next Ricky Foggy or the next, Adam Weber. Asad Abdul Khalik. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be Tony Dungy here and he's going to go out and win the Heisman, but I'm saying that if he can be an above-average quarterback consistently... And that's the big word I need to continue to stress here. That's going to be a theme throughout this podcast. Is if the quarterback play and the defense can just be consistent from week to week, yeah, there are going to be some games that Minnesota loses this year, but they're also going to be in so many more. And in turn, they're going to win, I believe, you know, some more games this fall if they can just be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
If Morgan can be consistently above average, you know, and he's going to have his ebbs and flows as any young quarterback does. He's got 6 career starts under his belt. But if he can just be consistent from week to week, I think you're going to see this offense really take off.
I mean, the whole team needs to be more consistent week to week, not just the quarterback room. And probably even more importantly, the defense needs to be more consistent, right? At one point, Bill Connelly had a really good article about how at times Minnesota would play at an Alabama level, and then they'd play at a Connecticut level.
For those of you who don't know anything about Connecticut football, there's a reason you don't know anything about Connecticut football, because they are absolutely awful. I think my St. Olaf Olies from 2011, 2012 could beat them.
Let's not get ahead of yourself. They're not good, but, you know, St. Olaf had a part in kicking out St. Thomas because they were scared to play St. Thomas. So, okay.
Anyways.
But I digress. Let's actually talk a little bit about defense. This probably, for most people, this is probably the biggest scar that they had from last season, because at times the defense was just absolutely horrific. And then they make the change of defensive coordinators, seemingly things simplify a little bit. Joe Rossi comes in and they go and play, 3 polar opposites in terms of offense. When you talk about Georgia Tech running the triple option, you've got a power running team in Wisconsin, you've got Purdue who spreads it out, and then Northwestern's kind of they spread it out quite a bit too. You see multiple
Georgia Tech's
fronts.
Triple options. Yep. You have Wisconsin's 2-3 tight end sets. You have Purdue's air raid, and Joe Rossi gets thrown in with 4 weeks to go, and he's
wins 3 of 3 or 4.
All 3 tests.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, when you look at this season, the first three games are going to be against basically very similar. Is it three or four? They're going to play multiple because Georgia Southern, they're a triple option, right?
Yep. And then, so I mean, in the non-conference, you have South Dakota State and you have Fresno State, which are going to be more of your traditional 3-4 wide receiver sets.
Yep.
And then Georgia Southern is also going to be a triple option team before Minnesota faces another spread team in Purdue to end out September. So you're not really going to see the 2-3 tight end sets until November when Iowa and Wisconsin come up on the schedule, as well as Northwestern. But it's nice for Joe Rossi that he gets to start with two kind of the same offenses before mm-hmm. he gets into Big Ten play, before you kind of have to deal with the whole Georgia Southern deal, of which, by the way, tangent here, did you see the Georgia Southern quarterback bird poop cocaine story?
I like
that. Is wild, man. I had no idea. So for those of you who haven't clicked on it and haven't read it, TLDR here is this guy gets pulled over and the cop like notices something on the hood and he gets out this field test and he tests it twice and it comes up positive for cocaine. And in the player, their starting quarterback, who's pretty dang good, he's like, it's bird poop. And he's like, dude, we just tested it and it's cocaine. I tested two different spots. Turns out the people of Gopher Twitter then tell me, and the people on Gopher Illustrated are like, those field tests are entirely inaccurate. They're like $2. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, how in the world are we throwing police officers $2 field tests for, is it bird poop or is it cocaine? That's wild. Regardless, to just get like, back on tangent here.
The conspiracy theories that one could make up about this.
Oh my gosh. I had no idea. I guess I gotta get my head out from underneath the rock. But so their quarterback was suspended. Now he's not suspended, even though the police are like,
wasn't another player suspended? Is he still suspended too? Is that unrelated?
One of their better defensive players is also still suspended. I think he got into a felony assault.
Oh, okay. So it's totally totally unrelated.
I don't know what's going on down there, but bird poop and cocaine is.
What are their birds doing down there?
I don't know, man. I don't know what's going down there in the ATL and that southern part, the southern part of Georgia. But let's
talk a little Gopher defense. So when you look at this Gopher defense, let's start at the scariest spot for me. That's probably defensive tackle. This is a position group that is going to have not a lot of experience, maybe more question marks than anything.
Sure. I mean, I think before I get into the defensive line here, I do want to say that one of the reasons I'm so, I guess, optimistic about this Gopher team is because of Joe Rossi and what he did show to end 2018. For those of you who don't remember, you just want the cobwebs knocked off here, why Joe Rossi was successful and Rob Smith wasn't with essentially the exact same team is Joe Rossi simplified things. Rob Smith was trying to do too much with a bunch of guys that didn't really understand what he was trying to portray, didn't understand what he was trying to do, and his scheme just went above the heads of many of the Gopher players. And so Joe Rossi takes over. He'd been watching from the sidelines. He'd been in those defensive staff meeting rooms. He meets with his defensive staff after Rob Smith is fired. And he's like, we really need to simplify things. And that's what they did on all three levels of the defense, the defensive line, linebacker especially, so Blake Cashman can focus on doing one or two things instead of four or five, and then in the secondary as well. And so I think the biggest change you're going to see from 18 to 19 here is just a multitude of different looks. And what I mean by that is I don't think you should get so set on thinking, is Minnesota a base 4-3, a base nickel, a base 3-4, a 2-4-5? You're going to see all those looks at some point this year because that's what Joe Rossi's about in terms of trying to fit. I always get this wrong, Luke, and I always feel so bad. Is it the players of the scheme or the scheme to the players?
No, you want to fit the scheme to the players, not the players to the scheme.
Correct. And so when he's trying, he looks at what he has across this defense right now, and he knows that he doesn't have a lot of experience coming back on the defensive line, but he's got a bunch of big edge types, big linebacker types that can really move in space, the Kamal Martins, the Thomas Rushes, the Carter Coughlins, the Thomas Barbers of the world. And while in the secondary, safety is still a little bit leery, and we'll get to that in a bit, I think they feel pretty good about what they have at corner. And so it starts on the defensive line, where Minnesota is going to have a different defensive line coach than last year. And if you don't know the name Jim Panagos already, you should probably get to know him, because he's the only other guy outside of PJ Fleck that I've seen. And I mean, Jim's probably, I believe Jim's in his 50s. He's been coaching football for a very long time. He's someone that I believe has been coaching college football for 20 years. He also had a stint with the Vikings back in the early 2000s. This is a guy that knows defensive line play. This is a guy that has 19 linemen into the NFL that he has coached at the collegiate level. And you look at Temple, where he was the last 2 years, I believe they had three defensive linemen drafted from the University of freaking Temple. And that, from what Panagos and other people have told me, they're going to have another couple drafted next year. And so what does that mean for this defensive line? I think if you start on the outside with the defensive ends, the two guys I think I'm most excited about that Jim Panagos is now here is number one, Asezi Otemiwu, and then also Carter Coughlin. And we talked with Carter Coughlin about his season last year. And by all indications, Carter had a great season. 15 tackles for loss, 9.5 sacks. That's pretty dang good. But the big thing was, how are you going to continue to add to your arsenal? Because Carter's only move essentially last year was the speed rush. And we talked with Carter about that yesterday, where he was at the Von Miller pass rushing summit out in California earlier this summer. And he talked about how they were did field work for 3 hours. They were in the film room for 4 hours, and how Carter this offseason, knowing that he's going into his senior year and as he really tries to continue to rise on NFL draft boards, he knows that he's got to show different moves. You can't just speed rush every time and get the results you want. You have to have an inside move. You have to have a bull rush. You got to have a spin move. And that's one of the biggest things that Jim Panagos has been working with him on is, Carter, your speed rush is great, but if you want it to be even better, you have to have counters to it. Now, Carter, in the early part of camp here, has been dealing with a little bit of tightness, I believe, in his hamstring. Nothing to worry about right now. He was working through drills yesterday. But in the spring, when I was watching one-on-ones, watching Carter Coughlin do use an inside move or a spin move against Minnesota's offensive tackles, I mean, once he got it once, those guys were setting so much slower, because now they're thinking, all right, Carter can't just do the speed rush around the edge. I got to set up to maybe he comes inside. And if he goes outside with that speed rush, he's even more effective. And maybe the guy I'm highest on most, I mean, I shouldn't say highest on outside of Carter Coughlin, is Asezi. He's now a redshirt sophomore. I believe he's number 9 on the roster. If you come to practice either Thursday or Friday here, you'll be able to see him in person. But he looks all the part of what Iowa has been throwing out at defensive end for the last 25 years. And finally, it's only taken Minnesota 25 years to actually get someone that looks like them. But Asezi in the spring was very good with Jim Panagos in terms of refining his technique. And then here in fall camp, whether it's been against the run, whether it's been against the pass, he's been the most effective guy out in that strong side defensive end group with Winston Delady-Boudair, with Mayan Ahanotu. I really think that you saw glimpses towards the end of 2018 there with Asezi. I think he takes the next step. Now, this is going to probably end up being my next Hank Epke, and I'm really hoping it doesn't, because Asezi's been pretty good. And I think Fa'alele and Schluter and Dixon are better than, I'm trying to even remember the tackles that Minnesota had. It was like Foster, Bush, and the fact that I can't remember them kind of speaks volumes to offensive line play for the last 16 years. But I just think that Asezi is going to have a much bigger role, number one, in 2019 here. And I also think he's going to be much more effective. But you look at those defensive end spots, Luke Winston is still going to be into the mix there. He and Asezi have been rotating pretty consistently throughout fall camp. While Winston is, in my opinion, I think the vocal and the heart and soul of this Gopher defense. I mean, this kid isn't the biggest or the strongest in the world. He's probably 6'1". Maybe 6'2", 255 pounds. He's not a huge guy, but he plays, as PJ Fleck would say, with so much how. He's got a lot of heart. I mean, this dude is always yelling and screaming and loving life. He's trying to mentor these young defensive linemen that Minnesota just signed in drills as well. And he's, you know, as PJ Fleck would also say, he's serving and giving. And I think that uses up my Fleckinisms for the rest of this episode. Oh, here.
Yeah, you're totally out.
Oh, yeah. But the other guy, the other two guys that rush defensive end besides Carter that have surprised me, I think the biggest one so far in fall camp here is Teyon Devers. And you may be thinking to yourself, why do I remember that name, Teyon Devers? Well, back when he was a freshman in 2016, he's the guy who decapitated two quarterbacks in non-conference play as a freshman, causing their helmets to fly off, and everybody's thinking, holy cow, here we go. Well, the next subsequent 2.5 years, it's been, where the heck has Teyon Devers been? But Teyon Devers is a senior now, has finally filled out the frame his max capacity, and he's been pretty quick at doing it in terms of his moves have been as explosive as what I remember. And then I'd say Boye Mafe between Devers and Coughlin. I mean, Boye Mafe physically looks more impressive than Carter Coughlin, and I think that's saying that. If you were going to have somebody on the defense get off the bus first, Boye Mafe is going to be that guy. Now, Mafe is still trying to figure out some of his moves, but Jim Panagos, I know, is extremely high on Mafe this year, and Minnesota's going to try to work him into passing down situations. But in 2020 and 2021, when Carter and Teyon are no longer there, and as Minnesota's trying to really work in some of these younger defensive linemen, Mafe's going to have a lot more on his plate.
Yeah, when you look at this defensive line, I know you've primarily talked about defensive ends, but you know they have to find a way to get pressure on the quarterback because outside of Carter Coughlin, I mean, pressure was effectively non-existent from this group.
Yeah, the stat from last year is go for defensive lineman, not named Carter Coughlin. Okay, they accounted for 15.5 tackles for loss and 5 sacks, while Carter on his own last year accounted for 15 tackles for loss and 9.5 sacks. The bar isn't exceptionally high to surpass that. And we'll see how accurate some of my sources are on the Gopher defense here that Jim Panagos is very confident that he can elevate this defensive line group. And it's one of the big reasons why he chose Minnesota over Georgia Tech. Now, if you remember right, Jim Panagos was going to be the Georgia Tech defensive line coach prior to the bowl game. And then Minnesota sees Marcus West go to Charlotte to be with Will Healy, someone he's got a lot of history with. And Minnesota is able to hire Jim Panagos away from Georgia Tech. And one of the reasons that he chose Minnesota is he saw the talent that Minnesota has on the defensive line compared to Georgia Tech. And that mattered to him. And so whether it is at defensive end or you look at defensive tackle, where it's going to be very inexperienced. And I acknowledge that. And that's pretty scary for me to talk about where you're – most experienced defensive lineman is arguably Sam Renner. I mean, you can say what you will about Notre Dame graduate transfer Micah Dutredway. He appeared in 20 games the last 2 years for Notre Dame, but he didn't accumulate a whole lot of stats. Keontae Shad is coming in as a junior college kid. Jamal Teague played in some games for Minnesota last year, but he was still a freshman. Mayan Ahanotu, someone that is a redshirt freshman, hasn't played. Noah Hickox hasn't played a lot of ball as well. You're just looking at a bunch of guys that haven't played a lot of football. But the thing about it is, I think we're finally over the years, seemingly in Big Ten play against Iowa and Wisconsin in the second half, where Minnesota's throwing out their 275-pound defensive tackles, and they're just getting destroyed. Well, you saw that against Wisconsin last year, that Minnesota held their own with a defensive line room that wasn't the biggest in the world. Now, Sam Renner is 290 pounds. Micah Dutredway is 305. Keontae Shott has added 25 pounds in the last 7 months since he's been here, and he's getting much better with his hand technique. Jamal T, there is no one in the defensive line room, from what I've seen at practice since Jim Panagos has been here, that Panagos is harder on than Jamal T because he sees what he could be. He sees where the talent could be. Because Jamal Teague is, I believe sources have told me that he's the strongest defensive lineman. And whether that's bench press, whether that's squat, this is a very strong young man. And if he keeps his pad levels low and he gets his hands right, I mean, he has no issues when that all comes together getting into the backfield. It's just finding consistency. And again, Jamal Teague has only been here 12, 18 months. He's going to be a true sophomore this year. But Panagos sees what kind of talent he is. He's going to mix in there as well. And then Mayan Ahanotu and Noah Hickox are guys that haven't played a lot of football. But for last year, Luke, if you'll remember, Minnesota rotated 8 guys on their defensive line. I would say that's going to be the minimum for this fall. because Minnesota's going to want to rotate in, you know, Boye Mafe along with Teyon Devers and Carter Coughlin at that defensive end spot. They're going to want to keep Renner, Shad, Du Treadway, Teague fresh by rotating in Maya Hanatu or Noah Hickox. And for the first time in quite some time, I think they're going to be able to redshirt all of their true freshman defensive linemen. You have D'Angelo Carter, D.V. Harris. You have M.J. Anderson. Rashad Chaney is back practicing. You're going to be able to redshirt them, be able to add 15, 20 pounds of weight, and really don't burn a redshirt like you've had to do in the past with guys like Steven Richardson, Jamal Teague, Nate Umlor, guys that weren't ready to play, but because Minnesota had no depth there, they had to play right away. Now, I'm not saying that Minnesota is now Alabama with the amount of depth they have on the defensive line, but they have an experienced depth that can provide enough depth, if that makes sense, to be, I think, more than adequate here in the Big Ten.
All right, and you know, the importance of keeping the defensive line fresh and keeping them on point is to protect the linebackers, which probably is the group that has arguably the most experience and probably the most depth, and at least from my perspective, a group that probably I have the most confidence in defensively going into this season. Guys like Thomas Barber, Kamal Martin coming back. I know you're super high on Thomas Rush, but this is a group that I expect some big things from, especially with quite a bit of experience.
I do as well, and I think the number one thing I got to start off with here is I expect Minnesota to be in nickel much more than they are in three linebacker sets this year, which sure means that you're going to see a lot of Thomas Barber and you're going to see a lot of Kamal Martin at times. Thomas Barber, a guy that from the long line of the Barber lineage, came in under-recruited, came in under-starred, and what has he done since then? Played in 36 games, totaling 200-plus tackles, 14.5 tackles for loss, and just a guy I think that's been unappreciated for some of the role that he's played here in the last 2 years especially, and now as a senior he's going to be counted upon quite a bit. And finally, Thomas Barber as well. Everything looks trim. Everything as now a senior looks, you know, he looks pretty cut. And for a guy that came in and he had a little bit of, you know, I shouldn't say a beer belly, but he had a little bit of a belly and he was able to fly around, but now he's cut weight. He's really looked into his nutrition, really kind of bought into what the strength and conditioning people, the dietitians, the nutritionists. He looks a lot slimmer than he did last year. Kamal Martin still should be in the, if you're going to have somebody get off the bus first, it should be Kamal Martin. Now, the biggest thing with Kamal Martin is you've seen in the offseason here, he's been named to the Senior Bowl short list for guys that they're going to be watching. I believe he was also named to a watch list for linebackers. It's never been about athletic ability for Kamal. It's been about trying to comprehend the defense. Now, it hasn't helped that he's in his third different defense in 4 or 5 years as a guy that is going into his fourth year trying to play linebacker.
Not to mention this is he didn't play linebacker in high school.
No, he played quarterback and he played safety. And so if you're being taught a bunch of different things throughout your entire college career, of course you're going to be pretty inconsistent. But now that he's had Joe Rossi was his coach last year, in terms of he was the linebacker coach and then he was the defensive coordinator. He stuck with the linebackers into the spring over the summer here. Is this the year Kamal can put it all together mentally? Is this the year we don't see Kamal out of position for those one or two key plays on, say, a third down or in the red zone where you're like, where is he going? Where is he going? Oh, first down or touchdown. Because if he can put it together, I mean, Kamal, the ceiling is there for him. He could be an NFL guy. He just has to be consistent, because if he's not consistent, I'm telling you what, Thomas Rush is going to be a dude. And I don't know. I talked about him on Gopher Illustrated as being one of my breakout players. I don't know if I'm a year early on that, just because if Kamal is playing well and Thomas is playing well, those guys are going to be getting the bulk of the snaps, the 90%+ of the snaps. And you're just not going to see a lot of Thomas Rush. But if Kamal struggles or Thomas struggles or there's an injury to one of those two guys, heaven forbid, I don't think the drop in play is going to be very significant, if at all, if Thomas Rush has to come in. Because Thomas has, you know, we talk about another guy who's reshaped his body. He's only going to be a true sophomore here now. Another guy that has only played linebacker for 2 years, and his first year being last year. he was committed to, I believe, Bowling Green in high school as a running back. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself now, in what world was Bowling Green selling him that, yeah, you know, you're 6'3", 210, and you run a 4.7. Yeah, I think running back's in your future. The head coach had to be thinking to himself, yeah, we're telling him running back, but we're actually going to move him to linebacker when he gets here. Well, Minnesota gets him, and this, I mean, he's so athletic. He just makes plays. You go back, watch the spring game, I believe he had 9 tackles, and he also had a pick 6. Thomas Rush is going to be someone that I think you're going to be happy to see here. You might not see him until the 2020 season because of Kamal and because of Thomas Barber, but the depth is there. I also think maybe one of the more interesting storylines here from fall camp so far is that Highland Park's own Josh Ani has been playing over Braylon Oliver. Now, we are still very much in the early part of camp where who knows how they determine some of these rotations with maybe it's, you know, lifting participation, maybe it's, you know, whatever the coach wanted to throw together that day, maybe to motivate a guy. But Josh Ani went from someone in the spring that was buried. I mean, we're talking he was with the fourth group of linebackers to now when they're sending out the second group, he's rotating in with Thomas Rush. He's rotating in with Mariano Sorry-Marin. And Braylon Oliver is in that third group with DJ Gordon and Donald Willis, the two freshmen there. So I think it's interesting just the way that they've kind of constructed things. But I would anticipate this being a base nickel team. Now, if they do decide to go 3-4 at times or 2-4-5, what does that mean? I would assume that would mean, and I think this would be pretty fun to see, you move Carter back to linebacker. So you've Carter on the edge. Nothing really changes for him. You could put Kamal Martin on the edge. You put Thomas Rush and Thomas Barber in the middle. Let's go. I mean, those are all guys who got some closing speed and aren't afraid to run right through the A or B gap and get after the quarterback. So that's where Minnesota's strength on this team is right now, is in this linebacker group. Or essentially with guys that are 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", 230 pounds and run really well with a lot of length and athleticism, that's where you have to figure out ways to get them onto the field. And that's why I'm even talking about 3-4 or 2-4-5. Is Minnesota knows that's how they get their best playmakers onto the field on, say, passing downs, or maybe you're going against a spread team that, you know, you really want to make sure you get after the passer with. You kind of throw some 3-4 looks at them in passing down situations just to switch things up. That's where I think you're going to see Joe Rossi be creative, because this linebacker room is his room. It's the one he coached before he was the defensive coordinator last year. He knows what they do well. He's with them every day. He's breaking down film with them every day. He knows what they do well, what they don't do well. And more times than not, they're the ones making the plays. So I'm going to be very curious to see how he mixes in the Kamal Martins, the Thomas Barbers, the Thomas Rushes, maybe the Josh Hannes or the Mariano Sorry-Marins. Mariano, I think he played in every game last year on special teams, but he had an ankle injury back in the spring. Now he's healthy. And I think you're going to be able to, once again, redshirt your linebackers with the Donald Willises and the DJ Gorans. I also wouldn't be surprised if Minnesota says, screw the redshirt, we're going to throw you guys on special teams to be missiles. Because if you remember watching Donald Willis and DJ Gordon, if you want to go back and watch their highlight tapes, they are heat-seeking missiles to wherever the ball is. And those guys, I'd say they're probably 6'1", but man, I remember being 18 years old and going through my first college football camp. I certainly didn't look as cut and as toned and as chiseled as those guys did. So I think the learning curve physically isn't going to be that much that drastic for those two guys.
All right. So I wasn't surprised that you said the Gophers are going to play quite a bit of nickel, but I am curious now to hear how they're going to play nickel, because this is a group they've in the past couple of years at defensive back, they've been a little light at depth, and I still see probably they're going to be a little light on depth. And if they have to come up with 5 and 6 guys pretty frequently, I'm curious how they're going to fill this out.
Well, let's start at the nickel, where I think it's, you know, PJ Fleck tried to be coy about it, saying, you know, it's a competition at every spot in the secondary. Okay, there's two spots in the secondary. I can about assure you there's no competition. One of them is nickel corner, and that's with Chris Williamson. You saw him transfer in from Florida back in 2017. He had to redshirt that season. And then he plays last year, doesn't play a lot early in September, early October. But then come October, November, December, that light really, and once Joe Rossi took over, I thought really flipped on for him. And so far, from what we've seen from Williamson at practices in the spring, practices in the fall, if you're going to ask one of the corners to go against Tyler Johnson and try to have success shutting him down, if I was to pick a corner to do so, I would pick Chris Williamson. As a redshirt senior, he's a 22, 23-year-old man trying to go against Tyler, who's also going to be a senior. And he's seen a lot of the different moves that Tyler wants to do. And you've also seen Chris be able to come up and run support and make a tackle in open space. And that's where I think after Chris, it's going to be interesting, because I don't think the depth is necessarily there. I guess Justice Harris as a junior now would be the guy behind him. I just really have no faith in Justice Harris being able to do much. Now, physically, he looks like a dude. I mean, he is as cut and as chiseled, and you know, if you look at his testing numbers, that's great. But I know from what I've seen on the field of Justice Harris, it's very inconsistent. And from what I've seen on game film, when Justice Harris has been in the game, it's been long plays and touchdowns. Now, again, playing him before he was probably ready doesn't, you know, necessarily reflect great on him, but it's the reality of what we've seen. So does that mean that Antoine Winfield potentially comes down? We've yet to see that in the spring. We've yet to see that in the summer, but I know sources have told Kyle and I that that's potentially going to be in the works. Or does someone like Saul Brown as a true freshman try to factor in, is there in, into there as well? I think best case scenario, Chris Williamson is healthy for every game. He's your nickel corner, and he's able to really do a lot against those Rondale Moores or against whoever they're trying to throw in the slot. Because you remember, it doesn't necessarily always have to be the Julian Edelman or the Rondale Moores in the slot, because Tyler Johnson was there last year. Now, Tyler Johnson's 6'2", 6'3". He's not the, you know, the little slot receiver. He's the big guy that can make you miss in a phone booth. And so that's where Chris has got to be able to defend a multitude of different receivers, and I feel pretty confident in him. At the other corner positions, that's where it gets a little bit more interesting right now. Is it Coney Durr? Is it Keandre Thomas? Is it Terrell Smith? Is it Phillip Howard? Or maybe the guy that's been gaining the most steam here in fall camp, the Michigan graduate transfer, Benjamin St. Just, who's still just only a sophomore. I truly didn't know what to expect from St. Just. I just didn't know. This is a guy that hadn't played a lot of football in the last 18 months, had battled this hamstring injury. Michigan tried to get rid of him. He said, screw you to Michigan. I'm just going to grad transfer out. You didn't know what he was going to look like after not playing football. And so far in fall camp, he's a legitimate 6'3", folks. I mean, he is a big dude, a lot of length and athleticism. My biggest question is, hopefully one I'll have answered here in the next 5 days at the practices I'll be at, is I really want to see if he can tackle. Is he a guy that against Iowa, against Wisconsin, Northwestern, isn't afraid to come up and make that open field tackle or be physical with that guy at the line of scrimmage? Because I know in pass protect or pass coverage, he's not afraid to be physical at the line. He's not afraid to be physical throughout the route. And so that's another guy that I just think is going to potentially factor in sooner than later. And I know from talking with Rod Chance, you guys heard about it on our last podcast, that you know he feels good about all six guys that I just talked about, the tee times, the Coney Durs, the Keandre Thomases, the Chris Williamsons, the Phillip Howard, and I think he's starting to feel pretty confident now in Benjamin St. Just as well. I mean, it's a good problem to have, because we're not talking about throwing out a true freshman there, a Tyler Newbin perhaps, which we'll get to at the safety position. But, you know, if I was a betting man right now, I still think you're starting Coney Durr and Chris Williamson. And then the question comes, Terrell Smith is now over 200 pounds, folks. He's 202 pounds. If you haven't seen the photos of him, I took some. They're on GopherIllustrated.com. They're free for you to look at. His legs are so much bigger than what they were a year ago. He definitely put some time into the weight room, onto the squat racks, into the deadlifts, trying to make sure he was building that lower body. And I know from talking with some people close to the strength and conditioning staff, he's still running a 4.3. I think what he ran this summer was a 4.3 8.40. The dude is still lightning fast at 6'1", 200 pounds. The biggest question for him then becomes, now that he's added the weight, is he going to come up and provide run support? Can he be physical in what's going to be cold November games that are going to mean a lot for Minnesota? Can Coney Durr continue on that trajectory he was on towards the latter half of the season, where mentally he was finally over that ACL? He trusted his body. He trusted that knee. Can he take that next step and really be another impact player for Minnesota consistently throughout 12, 13 games? Is this the year that Keandre Thomas can put it together as a redshirt junior? Can he provide run support? Can he stay out of trouble off the field? And then with Philip Howard, that's a guy that I know Rod Chance is extremely high on. Someone that as a freshman had to play right away at receiver for Minnesota, caught double-digit balls. And Luke, I remember talking to you on this very podcast about Philip Howard. Do you remember what you said about Philip Howard?
I like
every time he caught a ball in 2017?
Well, I don't remember. You're probably going to make fun of me, and it's probably justified. But I will say that dude got rocked a few times.
That was exactly what I was going to say. Is every time Philip Howard caught a ball in 2017, he got obliterated. Just Demry Croft and Connor Rota were throwing suicide balls up there. That if your receiver caught that ball, he was just going to get decapitated or catch a helmet to the ribs. And seemingly, poor Philip Howard, every time he caught one, he seemingly was just on the ground in pain because it was just a ball that they shouldn't have thrown. Well, what happened in 2018? Because you didn't hear Philip Howard's name. He was kind of lost in the shuffle at receiver, and he knew that. Matt Simon knew that. PJ Fleck knew that. And they looked at the corner position, and they were like, Phil, you played some of that in high school. You have a much better chance now to contribute there than you would at receiver. Would you like to go there? And he said yes. He accepted it, I believe, in November of last year. Went through all the spring with Rod Chance there, and now he's going into the fall here, and I've seen him get some reps with the ones at corner. So I also wouldn't be surprised if this is another position where Minnesota rotates a lot with their outside corners, whether it's maybe one series you have Terrell Smith and Coney Durr. Next series you have Benjamin St. Just and Keandre Thomas. Then Philip Howard also rotates in. I think Rod Chance and Joe Rossi feel pretty confident here so far. Now, there's still those big scrimmages left to come here in fall camp that are going to determine who can play and who can't, especially in the physical Big Ten. But I think early indications are that Minnesota maybe believes that they have a little bit more depth at corner than what they originally thought 9-10 months ago.
Yeah, so defensively in general, I mean, there are probably more question marks than certainties or, you know, things that we're banking on. But I think in the same respect, I know you're pretty high. You're still pretty high on Rossi and what he can do and put guys in positions to be successful. But to me, this has to be the backbone. I think the identity of this team is probably going to be offense, but this has got to be the backbone that's going to keep them in games. Just, you know, at the end of the day, you got to score more points than the other team, and the defense has to be able to bend but not break. And that's what I'm going to be looking for. If they can find a way, you know, to not give up massive amounts of yards to a team like Illinois, just get completely blown out of the water in the first half against a Nebraska. They need to bring that consistency game in and game out. They cannot have those UConn-like games this coming season if they're gonna be vying for a Big Ten West title.
Well, they're going to need two things to happen from their safety positions for that to happen. Number one, Antoine Winfield has to stay healthy for over half the season. Antoine Winfield, when he's on the field, everybody has seen it. He is just a playmaker, and that's what he does. Whether that's from the safety position, whether that's as a punt returner, every time the ball comes near him, good things tend to happen for the Minnesota Golden Gophers. Now, Winfield is fully healthy once again. He's off that freak Liz Frank non-contact injury against Maryland. I think I've said this about 50 times this offseason. So for those of you who haven't heard it yet, luckily for Minnesota, Minnesota doesn't play Maryland until late October this year. So worst case scenario, if for the third consecutive year Antoine Winfield goes down with a non-contact injury against Maryland, they at least get 7.5 games of him instead of 3.5, 4.5 games. Because the depth here at safety is pretty scary. Now, they've hired the right guy. If you were going to hire, you know, an up-and-comer in the coaching profession, Joe Harris-Simiak was going to be the guy. And for those of you who aren't familiar with Minnesota's first-year safety coach, like, who the heck is Joe Harris-Simiak? Well, here's the cliff notes. Is Joe Harris-Simiak worked with Joe Rossi back in his Rutgers days, and most recently Joe was the head coach of the Maine football team. For those of you who didn't know Maine, the Maine Bears, as they're like to be called, are a Division I football team, and they made it to the FCS semifinals last year, which is absolutely crazy to me because the talent base that they actually can recruit and that folks will actually come to Augusta, Maine, I believe is where they're located to play football, is pretty slim. It's pretty slim pickings. We're not talking about Alabama's of the world or the USC's or the Texas's. There's a select amount of individuals that want to go to Maine 9-12 months a year. And so he leads them all the way to the FCS semifinals, which is the best they've done in school history. And it was led by their defense, of which he was the defensive head coach, kind of the Mike Zimmer type. Well, they didn't pay him a lot there. I believe that he was paid. He was the lowest paid head coach in the conference, only, quote unquote, only making around $120,000 a year. So Joe Rossi calls him up after they get eliminated in the FCS semifinals. They get him here to Minnesota. They hire him as the safety coach. He gets a raise. He gets to not live in Maine, and he also gets to now live in the Twin Cities. And from all the people I've talked to that have known Harris Simiak or know about him or the people on the staff that have worked with him now, they all say he's one of the brightest minds that they've worked with. Now, he's not an old guy. I believe he's early 30s, but he's a guy that is pretty innovative with what he wants to do, and he's a very good teacher. I know that when you look at this defensive back room, they're on their third different defensive back coach in 3 years. You've gone from – actually, they're on their fourth different guy in 4 years. You went from Jay Sawbell to Mo Lindquist to Jamal Adai. So now you have Rod Chance and Joe Harris Simiak. So you have a lot of different voices. You have a lot of different techniques. You have a lot of, this is the way you should do it, not this way. But then a new coach comes in, and then it's the opposite, and these guys kind of get screwed up. And so now that you – one of the big reasons why – PJ Fleck did it the way he did with going from two defensive line coaches to now two secondary coaches is because I think there's a, you know, folks aren't well aware that most corners can play safety, but not all safeties can play corner. There's just different things about what they're asked to do, both physically with their hips, just different calls, different things like that, where they really wanted to divvy up the duties. So there wasn't any crossover in terms of, you know, we're going to be teaching different things. These are your responsibilities. This isn't. And so that's where Harris Simiak comes in to work with the Antoine Winfields. But the rest of that room is where, again, we're talking about inexperience. Jordan Howden was very hot or very cold last year. And there was a lot of cold moments there, especially when Rob Smith was his defensive coordinator. And, you know, unfairly to Jordan Howden, he was put on an island more times than not. It was him making the tackle against Nebraska or against Illinois, or it was 70 yards to the house. And we're talking about a true freshman, and that didn't go well for Minnesota. You all remember that. And then towards the latter half of the season, he got a little bit more consistent. But the question is, can he find and provide that consistency, or is it going to be Benny Sapp, who is now finally, for the first time since he's been about 13, 14, he got through an entire football season healthy. He got through an entire offseason healthy. Now he's not even wearing a brace on those knees that have seen multiple ACL tears, and he's running around out there. So now that he feels confident mentally that he can make it through, how is his learning curve going? How about Calvin Swenson, who continues to be on scholarship from, I'm going to mess up this Wisconsin town, and I apologize. I think it's Kakona, Wisconsin. He was a walk-on that earned a scholarship. Or is it going to be Tyler Newbin, who physically, folks, Tyler Newbin is everything you would hope and dream for from a defensive back in the Big Ten. Now, I just want them to be able to redshirt him because I'd rather have Tyler Newbin at 22, 23 than a freshman year of him playing six games sparingly, potentially as an 18, 17-year-old kid. I mean, to me, from what I've seen of Tyler Newbin, physically, physique-wise, he reminds me of Demaryius Travis, but he's more explosive than what I think Demaryius was, and I think he has the playmaking skills of what Jacob Huff provided the last couple seasons here, where Jacob Huff was consistently always around the ball at safety. Now, PJ Fleck has said that they're going to move Tyler Newbin from safety to corner at times during fall camp. We've only seen him work at safety during fall camp, but I mean, you mentioned it, Luke. I mean, defensive tackle and safety. I think safety is the one position on this defense that has me the most worried right now, because if the safety isn't where they need to be, you know, say they get sucked in on play action and they're not able to be the last line of defense where, you know, say it's one-on-one on the outside and Howden gets sucked up in play action. He's not there to be the last line of defense, and the receiver then can take the top off the defense. And so I trust Antoine Winfield. He just needs to stay healthy. And then Minnesota needs to prove with Harris Simiak back there that Jordan Howden can become consistent, that they can get something consistent potentially out of Benny Sapp, Kelvin Swenson, maybe Saul Brown. It's going to be an interesting season for Minnesota at that position especially.
Yeah, in general, defense is still a large question mark for me. I don't think that's any surprise. I think that Rossi did some incredible things, but I'd like to see a larger sample size in, what was it, 4 or 5 games? I can't remember exactly off the top of my head. But, you know, it will be interesting. At the end of the day, I just want to see consistency, and that's something they have to prove, over a stretch of time rather than, you know, in bursts of one game or one half or one quarter at a time. They're just the consistency was just so lacking last year. And until we see that, don't get me wrong, I think they have the opportunity. There are just too many question marks right now to feel confident about that going in, at least for me, from a defensive perspective.
I'm with you. And again, I'm not saying this, you know, after listening to this, you should feel like Minnesota has the 85 Bears or the 2017 Minnesota Vikings squad.
Or the black shirts, you know.
Nebraska.
Why so many cheap shots for me at Nebraska? I don't know.
I don't know. But Luke, they're going to go win the college football playoff. Haven't you heard? They're going to go from 8 wins the last 2 years. Scott Frost is going to bring them to the promised land.
Yeah, I don't know.
Scott Frost forever, baby.
Yeah.
But I think your concerns are justified because those are the same ones I have. And I know those are the same ones that there are people inside Minnesota's defensive room have. Is how do we go, you know, if you're Joe Rossi, the number one thing is the thing you just brought up, is how do we continue on that momentum that we built with me as defensive coordinator last year, where we were just consistent. And we were consistent against inconsistent offenses in terms of scheme. The triple option, the 2-3 tight end power sets, the spread, but we really haven't left. They haven't really lost a lot outside of like Jacob Huff.
Right. The thing that blows my mind though, and what drove me so wild last year was against teams that arguably were like world beaters offensively in Purdue, they were able to hamper, right? But or hold in check. But then you've got Illinois, and they just got absolutely obliterated against Illinois. That's the thing that's
That's where it's almost like you have to throw it out because Rob Smith.
It's such an outlier.
Disaster and dumpster fire.
Yeah. Did he get a job?
No, I don't think Rob Smith is currently employed anywhere, which I think speaks volumes potentially.
But I thought he was Belichick's guy, right?
He was Greg Schiano's guy.
Oh, that's right. That's great.
He was Greg Schiano's guy, and maybe the fact that, you know, he got fired midseason wasn't going to bode well for him going to Bill Belichick and saying, you know, we should hire this guy, but just the stark change they had in defensive consistency, defensive play with essentially all of the same players was mind-boggling. You go from giving up 40-plus points in Big Ten play under Rob Smith to then averaging 14, 15 points a game, and you're facing the Purdues, the Wisconsins, the Northwesterns of the world. You know, Northwestern, not necessarily a world beater, but Wisconsin's offense can be pretty lethal. You've seen that as a Golden Gopher football fan against Minnesota for essentially the last decade. And Minnesota's able to stop them. Georgia Tech's triple option had been very, very worrisome for many opposing defenses all year. Joe Rossi stops them. And you look at the faces that Minnesota has to replace. I mean, really the only ones are Jacob Huff. And I think that is going to be a legitimate question, is can Minnesota find something? You know, I wish Jacob Huff would have had another year here to play as a senior alongside Winfield this year, but that's not the reality. And then at defensive tackle, O.J. Smith, Royal Silver, and I'm forgetting one more name, and I'm a terrible person for it, that played a lot last year at defensive tackle for them. But I think that Keontae Schott, I think that Mike Adu Treadway, just the other names that Minnesota has in the mix there can provide and be as good, if not a little bit better than what they saw at defensive tackle. But really it comes down to the secondary, for me anyway, is can they get consistency from their safeties? Can they be the guys making those open field tackles or are they going to be the ones giving up the 70-yard touchdowns to Illinois, to Nebraska, where Adrian Martinez is going to come in here in November, or excuse me, October, and they're going to try to do a lot of things with him. They're going to try to do a lot of things with J.D. Spielman. And how can Joe Rossi find consistency with this defense? Because I think the talent is there. You just have to get at spots the young and inexperienced talent playing well. Because if you do, that's where we continue to come back to with the ceiling that Minnesota has this year. With the talent they have on offense, they're going to score points. They're going to score a lot of points. Like, we're talking 28, 31 points a game points in Big Ten play. And it's going to come down to, can Joe Rossi limit teams to 20, 21, 23 points a game to keep their offense in it, to where we're not talking about games in Big Ten play come October again, Luke, where it's like, well, the offense, you know, they played pretty well, but the tough part was they were down 24-0 18 minutes into the game. Or they were down 24-7 18 minutes into the game, where Kirk Shiroka's game plan goes out the window and it's, all right, here we go. Pass the ball 40 times because you can't run the ball. You can't.
Yeah.
You just can't do that. You know, if you can keep Kirk Shiroka in the game with what Minnesota has talent-wise on offense, and that comes down to the defense being able to provide something, that's where I think you can still see those 8 or 9 regular season wins and be competing for a Big Ten West title.
And let's not underplay the fact that, you know, the Gophers, when it was bad, it was bad last year defensively. And confidence is a fickle thing, right? Consistency sometimes is related to confidence when it comes to football. There is no statistical metric to track that. Maybe we can send out a bat signal to MV of DT and he can actually like let us know if he's done any analytics on confidence and consistency. But all that said, like, honestly, when it was bad, it was bad, and they needed like the week off between it. And that's the thing. It was so bad at times last year.
The defense was atrocious. We broke it down with Derek Burns, of which, by the way, we did get confirmation. We sent a carrier pigeon to Derek Burns. It took 3 weeks to get back to us, but Derek is going to be joining us here once again on Gopher Gridiron Radio for breakdown starting in Big Ten play. So you're going to have to deal with just Luke and I talking football.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
South Dakota State, the Fresno State, and the Georgia Southern game. But Derek is going to be back, and I know that's going to make a lot of people happy, including me, with Derek being my second cousin and all. But before we get out of here, Luke, should we talk a little bit of special teams before?
Dude, there are so many more question marks on special teams than there are defense. I don't even know where we're going to start. Like,
you're the special teams guy.
Dude, we don't even know who the kicker is going to be. Jacob Herbers is like,
Jacob Herbers. Like, oh, my gosh. Jacob Herbers experience is 41. It's a 41-yard punt that is fair caught, which a 41-yard net punt. Apparently Minnesota's all game for it. They don't want to have him try to boot it any further than that. But I mean, Jacob Herbers is about the only thing we know about special teams that we can say definitively, this is our starter. Because you mention it, kicker, there's no more Emmett Carpenter. So you're looking at three guys essentially competing for field goals and extra points. One is, you know, we bash Connecticut enough on this podcast.
Yeah.
Well, now we have to talk about their kicker. Michael Tarbutt, who is a graduate transfer, kicked for them the last couple of years. He's at Minnesota here trying to win that starting job. Minnesota also has a true freshman by the name of Michael Lance. He's on scholarship already from the state of Georgia. He's in the kicking competition. And a guy that you shouldn't sleep on as well is a kid from Sioux Falls, who I believe is a redshirt sophomore now, by the name of Brock Walker. So for those of you who haven't been able to get to practice, or you haven't been on Gopher Illustrated yet to read my practice reports, of which, by the way, folks, it's literally and figuratively a dollar if you wanted to hop in at Gopher Illustrated to read my practice reports. Like, you get your first month for a dollar. Luke, you know what you could buy for a dollar nowadays?
Not coffee, that's for sure.
You literally can't even buy a cup of coffee, but you can subscribe to Gopher Illustrated and support me and Ryan James for a dollar. But I digress.
Okay, I got more special teams takes here. They're not super hot, but I'm going to say that they're going to have less punt return touchdowns this season because they had two last year, and those things just never come around. So the fact they basically use all of them.
If you go back and you look at Rob Wenger at Western, when he got into year 3 and 4 there as the special teams guru coach, and they had some success. And while Brock Walker and Michael Lance and Michael Tarbutt are still rotating in practice, each getting ample opportunities to prove themselves, Minnesota's still trying to figure out who's going to be that guy there. The kickoff guy used to be Emmett Carpenter. My two guesses there would be either Brock Walker, the Sioux Falls walk-on there, or maybe Grant Rierse. The East Ridge kid is still here. Yeah, you heard that right. Still on scholarship. Now as a redshirt sophomore, he's not in the kicking competition. He's maybe the third-string punter. So we'll see if he's potentially the kickoff guy. And then we get to punt return, Luke. Here's my question for you. Would you rather Demetrius Douglas be the guy or Antoine Winfield? Both of them last year, as you'll remember, had a punt return touchdown.
Yes, one had like an NFL blitz-like return touchdown. I don't know if you remember. You're probably too young for NFL blitz.
Oh, it was this. Stop. I mean, we're talking like late 90s. I mean, what am I playing this? Hey, here, I'll date myself. I mean, one of my first gaming systems, maybe it dates some other people, was my Sega Genesis.
I don't think
where I would pop in the Madden 1998 into that. I had to blow into the cartridge or like put it in at like a half angle for it to work. Oh, yeah. I'm well aware of the NFL blitzes of the world, young man.
Here's the thing. I'm not on Twitch. I know we had an earlier conversation about Twitch today, but are you watching old Madden games from the Sega console on Twitch? Does somebody have a stream there?
Oh, there's a video game that you want to try to be nostalgic about, twitch.tv, you can find it there and just reminisce on what it was like back in 2002 when you and your buddies would come over. Pop in the Madden 2004, the NBA Live, for people. The NBA Jam, whatever it was. Trust me, if you want to take a trip down nostalgia lane, you can find it there. But back to the question.
For the poor people that had to stop their lawnmowers and be like, why are they talking about Twitch? Like, sorry, Ryan and I back and forth. We text and talk more than people know.
We do.
And we got into a rabbit hole about Twitch today. But all that said, let's get back to special teams.
So Demetrius Douglas or Antoine Winfield being your punt returner, Luke, which one would you rather have?
I want Demetrius Douglas. I just feel a little. I don't remember. Did he secure more catches? I just don't want Antoine Winfield hurt. And if he gets hurt on a punt return, I'm going to be so mad.
Both agree on that is. Yeah, Antoine Winfield is dynamic with the ball in his hand,
right.
But I'd rather have him give me 12, 13 games of safety and not have some freak injury.
Right.
Where he's returning and some linebacker comes and hits him on the side of the knee, torn ACL. Just let him play safety. Let Demetrius Douglas, who's by all accounts the number 4 receiver right now, let him be the punt returner. You saw him have success with that at times last year, mainly in the Wisconsin game amongst others. Let him be the guy. I mean, other guys returning punts I've seen so far, Chris Ottman-Bell, and then the two true freshman running backs, Trayson Potts and Cam Wiley. But I would imagine it's Demetrius Douglas's to lose. Kick returning-wise, Demetrius Douglas is also probably going to be your guy. But I also think you'll potentially see at times Mo Ibrahim, Chris Ottman-Bell, Rashad Bateman I think would be pretty fun there as well. Trayson Potts is back there returning. Cam Wiley, we'll see about that. And then your favorite position on the entire football team, long snapper, Luke. Yeah. And Minnesota has an elite long snapper for you to get to know over the next 4 years.
Well, let's for the record, Peyton Jordahl did not get enough love, right? That man,
your guy, Peyton Jordahl.
I'd give that guy a high five. He was
wow. You'd give him all of a high five, you say?
Yeah, I mean, if I saw him in the street, I wouldn't recognize him, but I would just give him a random high five because, honestly, that guy was the measure of consistency at long snapper. Like, he needs some love, and long snappers get no love in football.
And speaking of that, Brady Weeks, who is the true freshman scholarship long snapper that maybe you'll never know over the next 4 years. The story is when Minnesota had their big recruiting weekend and Brady came on his official visit, you know, PJ asked all the recruits to get up and talk and say something about themselves in front of the entire recruits and their families and everybody. Brady gets up there. He goes, "Hey, I'm Brady Weeks. I'm the long snapper. And hopefully this is the last time you'll ever hear my name." And then he drops the mic. That is what I want in my long snapper is, yeah, I'm your long snapper. I'm well aware that it's not the most glamorous position. No one's going to talk about me unless something's bad.
Yeah.
But if I did my job over the next 4 years, you'll never know my name. And I'm 100% okay with that.
Yeah.
So I would be hard pressed to believe that Brady Weeks is not your long snapper as a true freshman in week one, which, I mean, that's going to make me and anybody else a little bit hesitant that still a true freshman long snapper. And I think Minnesota is going to be locked into some contested contests in the Big Ten going into the fourth quarter where maybe, you know, you're playing and you're at Kinnick Stadium. Minnesota has got a 33-yard field goal to win in Kinnick for the first time in 20 years. Yes, you heard that right. Minnesota has not beaten Iowa at Iowa since the year of our Lord, 1999. So you're just hoping that the freshman long snapper can get it there and that whoever the kicker is can get it out there. But I think that's enough special teams talk. There's enough people trying to, you know, stop raising their decks, of which, by the way, but another aside before we end this, folks, Luke, you have to tell the story about I turn around at the live event and I see John Deere on our table.
So
what in the world happened?
So one of the faithful listeners, I believe he's a GI member. I believe I know his screen name. Is it Irwin W.A.?
Irwina.
Irwina. I believe it was Irwina.
Very good friend of the podcast.
Yeah.
Him and I talk in text more than people.
I believe that was him because I met him once before. He came up to me and I don't know what you even call them. They're not action figures, but like he has two lawn
models.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. Little models. He had two of them and he gave them to us. And he goes, "Hey, I heard if I brought my lawnmower, I got preferential treatment on seating." And so
we have two John Deere riding lawnmower like model things that are probably like the size.
They're
of
toys,
your
right? They're effectively
yes,
toys.
They're toys, and it's wonderful and. I just think that speaks to the community that we have, the dedicated community that we have. I mean, Luke and I were talking about the podcast numbers in terms of listens and downloads. And guys, I mean, we're as big as we've ever been, especially at this time of the year. And that's all thanks to you guys. And so for us to be able to have the live events, for us to be able to, you know, joke around with you guys, raise your decks. Mr. Buehler.
I was told we have to you have to lower your deck to start the episode and you raise your deck to finish the episode. So it's so good. Okay. Yeah. I want to thank everybody for listening to the podcast. Like Ryan said, we're just blown away by the support and it's been a lot of fun. We're excited about the upcoming season. If you know other people that might enjoy the podcast, teach a friend to podcast. It's not very difficult. There are many platforms that reach us on.
I think that podcasting now, you know, it used to be this thing when we started this back in, I think 2015, it was like, "Oh, you have a podcast? Cool, dude." Like,
yeah.
No one listens to podcasts. Guys, a podcast is just a radio episode that you get into your phone and it's right there. And so if you don't want to listen to, you know, talk radio during the day or you're mowing the lawn, or you're at the gym or you're trying to listen to something during work and you want to listen to something and learn something, that's where this podcast come in. And that's where it's essentially as easy as telling your friend, go to the Google machine, type in Gopher Football Podcast. And I believe we're the first thing that pops up. They can find us. They can subscribe, which is free. So it gets directly into their inbox, and we go from there. And for those of you who are listening to this on Thursday, August 8th, I will remind you that tonight at TCF Bank Stadium, doors open at 7:30. Practice starts at 7:45. You can go watch a Gopher football practice if you want. If you're listening to this and tomorrow's or it's Friday, August 9th, they have a practice open. As well, that's going to be at the Larson Performance Center, the new complex that they have over there. I believe it's around 4:30. And then their final open practice for the public is on Friday the 16th, also that afternoon at Larson Indoor. So if you want to go check out a Gopher football practice, that's how you go do it. Luke and I are going to be back next week. I'll be able to watch. I've seen two Gopher practices already But I really want to watch a couple more before we come back next week, probably about this time. And I, you know, we start to get into what's it looking like, folks. I mean, I'll have four or five practices under my belt. I'll have talked with enough sources about how does the coaching staff feel now that they're into their second, third week of camp. And so that's what we'll be back is we'll be back next week. Talk a little bit about what I'm seeing at these Gopher football practices as we're almost, I think as we sit here tonight, Luke, we're 22 days away from the opening game, which is wild.
It's totally wild. Yeah, it'll be fun. So, I want to thank everybody for listening per usual, and go Gophers.